Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. And today we are on the road in Lakeside. We are here to tell you all about the 50th anniversary of the Lakeside Rodeo. And my special guest today is Betty Washburn, who is the media coordinator for the Lakeside Rodeo. Welcome to the show, Betty.
Thank you very much.
Now, tell us about the history of rodeos for listeners who may not be familiar with the sport. How did it all get started?
Well, the sport of rodeo wasn't a sport. It was actual gentlemen on their ranches and stuff rounding up their cattle and branding them, and it went from there. They had to break horses, so saddle bronc riding started and bareback riding started that way. It was part of the ranching culture that you had to do these things, and then it came about that, mm-hmm. This would be fun if we competed doing that. So they went into on ranches and stuff. All the hands would get together and kind of compete doing that.
Yeah, it goes back to the vaquero days.
It goes back, well, Midwestern, and then the vaqueros also out here in the West. But it was part of ranching. It was what you did, and they thought it would be fun to get together and compete doing that, and then it just kind of grew from there, ranch against ranch, and then it got bigger and bigger, county against county. So rodeo actually came out of ranching.
Right. Now, tell us about the Lakeside Rodeo, how and when this one got started, which today is run by the El Capitan Stadium Association.
Yes. The El Capitan Stadium Association was actually formed by a group of parents, teachers, and administrators up at the El Capitan High School, and they wanted to build a football field. So the parents and everyone got together, and they needed to raise money. They didn't have money to do that. And the school district had just built another high school, so they didn't have a lot of money to do that. So a gentleman came forward and said, maybe we could put on a rodeo. Lakeside has had rodeos before. They've been fairly successful. Maybe we could do that. So they rented some ground. They rented some arena fixtures, some bleachers, and rodeo chutes and stuff, and put on their first rodeo in 1964. And it was successful. So they did it again in 1965, and then it grew from there. And then in 1969, a very generous lady happened to have this piece of property that we're sitting on now, and she donated it to the El Capitan Stadium Association.
Nice.
As long as this land was used for the benefit of the youth of Lakeside. So that's what we do.
Marvelous. So, yeah, you benefit a lot of the youth of Lakeside. Tell us some of the organizations.
We do.
The rodeo helps.
Well, the El Capitan High School, of course, Lakeside Union School District. We do the National and Little Leagues. We do the Pop Warner Football. We've helped build the Boys and Girls Club. Almost all the school extracurricular events come to us for funding.
That's great.
And Boy Scouts.
The 4-H Club, I think, right?
We do 4-H. Mm-hmm. We do FFA. We actually lease part of the grounds behind us for the Eastern San Diego County Junior Fair, which is in May.
Nice.
And so that's part of what we do.
Now, the big rodeo here, the Lakeside Rodeo, is held every year in late April. This year, the rodeo is going to be April 25th, 26th, and 27th. And as always in recent years, it's part of a bigger festival called Western Days. Tell us about that.
Well, Western Days is formulated around the rodeo, of course. And the weekend before, they start with little events throughout the town. Chamber does little things, and we go on, and the Lakeside Optimist has a barbecue on Thursday before the event. There's a whole bunch of little things that go on throughout the week so that everything is centered around Western Days. It is all...
Yeah, chuck wagon dinners and all kinds of things, it looks like.
Yeah.
Pancake breakfast. And then, of course, the big thing is the Lakeside Parade, right?
Well, the Lakeside Parade is on Saturday morning prior to our Saturday afternoon matinee performance. So there's a parade. I believe it steps off at 7:30, 8 o'clock in the morning, and it goes until about 10 in the morning, and then everybody goes and has a little something to eat, and then they come to the rodeo.
And it runs all weekend, and then on Sunday you even have cowboy music and poetry. And
the chamber has a little cowboy deal over at the park, and then we have cowboy church on Sunday morning here at the grounds for the cowboys and the rest of us who are around here to do that.
Now, what are the rodeo events that people can expect to see if they come here?
Well, of course, there's bull riding, team roping.
How long is considered a long time to ride that bull?
Well, 8 seconds is the time that you want to stay on the bull in order to be able to collect any money. And that's the working time of that animal. So that animal gets to work 8 seconds, and then he goes back to his pen and relaxes.
So there, he's got a pretty good life.
He's got a real good life, yeah.
What are the other events?
There's bareback riding. There's saddle bronc riding. There's tie-down calf roping. There's team roping, which is two gentlemen trying to rope a steer. There's still wrestling, and then, of course, there's bull riding. And then we have the ladies' event, which is barrel racing.
Yeah. Now, one thinks of rodeo as being sort of the ultimate macho, manly sport, but it sounds like it's changed through the years.
Well, everything evolves. So the big events like bull riding and the saddle bronc riding and all the rough stocks is predominantly men-based. There are a few women who join in the team roping, and then, of course, there's the barrel racing, which is almost all women. There are, once in a while you get a man, but it's right. Almost all women.
And this rodeo is officially part of the Professional Rodeo Cowboy Association, the PRCA, correct?
Yes, that
is correct.
Sanctioned
event.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that at a national level, the sport has changed. As you noted, it began with cowhands, ranch hands, and now I understand at the national level, more than half of the competitors in these professional rodeos have never worked at a cattle ranch. Is that the case here?
That is pretty correct. A lot of these gentlemen, that's all they do is rodeo, and they make a lot of money doing it. You have to remember that if you go to bigger rodeos, mm-hmm. there's a lot of money involved.
What are the prizes? If somebody wins the top prize here, what do they get?
Here it's in the $7,000 to $8,000 range.
Mm-hmm.
If you are lucky enough and you get the points and you've made enough money throughout the year and you go to NFR, which is in Las Vegas, in December, it's millions of
wow.
dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So they're talking big money.
A
lot of these cowboys are millionaires just because this is what they've done. They've also done some advertising promotions, and they get paid just like every other athlete.
Sports celebrity, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, how interesting. Now, Betty, I understand there's one more event that's rather unusual that's kind of a specialty that's evolved here. Tell us about that.
We do have another event. We include the kids in our rodeo, because that's who we are, that's what we do. So we have a stick horse race for children from 3 to 6 years old.
Cute.
They sign up when they come in the front gate, and then somewhere around the middle of the performance, they're called out, and they come down to the arena. They're issued a horse, a stick horse, of course, mm-hmm. but they're issued their horse, and then they're lined up, and then they get to race to the other end of the arena and
get
back.
Up.
And to be honest, every child gets a prize.
Well, that sounds like a lot of fun. There's been concerns raised at some rodeos, as with circuses and so forth, about humane treatment of the animals. What do you do at your rodeo to protect the animals and to assure that they're treated as humanely as possible?
We're very fortunate. To start with, the PRC is very strict about the animal rights and mm-hmm. animal care. Our stock contractor has invested hundreds of thousands of dollars into these animals, so he doesn't want them hurt or injured in any way.
Sense.
Also, we're very fortunate that we use the junior fair grounds with the covered building over there, and that we house the majority of the animals undercover so that they're out of the elements.
Mm-hmm.
We make sure that they are treated well. If there is an injury, we have vets here on staff all the time to make sure that they're taken care of immediately.
Good.
And we do that for the cowboys also in case they get hurt.
Yeah, there you go.
So
the rodeo clowns, I guess the guys have to run out and distract that bull or bucking.
Well, Mr. Higley is pretty quick, so he's okay. But yeah, we make sure that our animals that are used here are strictly taken care of by the PRCA rules. And of course, Mr. Growney and Mr. Kish, who are the owners of the animals, they are very strict about what's taken, how they're taken care of and what's done with them.
Yeah, I imagine it takes special breeding to raise some of these champion animals, the bull riding and
it does.
Bucking broncos and so forth.
It does. Mr. Growney and Mr. Kish have a couple of different ranches where they specialize in breeding and raising the bronc horses along with the bulls. And some of their bulls have been nationally known and are very, very, very well known throughout the community of rodeo. They've had one bull that's never been ridden, so he's a very, very expensive bull, because if you don't ride him, you don't get money, and they do. So that's kind of the deal. And mostly The goal of these animals are to go to NFR just like with the cowboys. Mm-hmm. So the better they perform throughout the year, the harder they are to ride, the better chance they are to go to NFR.
Interesting. Well, there you go. Now, you also crown a rodeo queen each year, I understand.
We do. We just had our pageant last month, and our new rodeo queens are Rachel Sarno Owens, and then our junior queen is Amanda Hopp, and they promote our rodeo. That's what their jobs are. They go out and do the promotion. They mm-hmm. do the personal appearances. They go throughout the week of Western days. They go to all the schools. Mm-hmm. They're promoting with the kids. They're playing with the kids. And then during the rodeo, they are in the arena. They are helping move cattle. And then they also are out there to be with the kids. They sign autographs. They're the beauty part of the rodeo.
Mm-hmm. And Lakeside, of course, has a very rich history of cowboys and ranching. It dates all the way back to the Spanish land grants. And, of course, before that, the Native Americans that were here on this land and the horses. So this is a proud Lakeside tradition.
It is. Rodeo actually started in Lakeside in the early 1900s. There were some years that we didn't have rodeo. Mm-hmm. And then in the 30s and 40s, it became prominent again. And it's been on and off and on and off. Now, this association has promoted this rodeo and done this rodeo for the last 50 years.
So are you planning some special activities this year since it is the 50th anniversary of the rodeo?
We do have a specialty act coming in that's a little bit of a surprise for everyone.
And can you give us any hints or tell us what it's about?
Let's just say he's very colorful. He does some really neat things with a rope. I think everybody will really enjoy his act. He's very special to us, and he's very special to the rodeo community.
Well, there you go. I'm certainly looking forward to finding out more about that. Next, I'm going to introduce Mary Clark. And Mary, I understand that you're in charge of ticketing for the event. Can you tell our listeners where they can get tickets for this if they're interested in coming to the Lakeside Rodeo?
I'd be happy to. We have tickets available at Boot Barn in Kearny Mesa, Boot Barn in El Cajon. Currently, we're selling them online through our website, lakesiderodeo.com. There's a phone number you can call. The phone number is area code 619-561-4331.
And I see here also that there's going to be some specialty acts this year, too. It looks like you're going to have the Winchester Widows, the Victorian Roses Riding Society, Grand Ladies of the Old West, and the Hole in the Wall Gang. So some Western reenactors, and looks like a whole lot of fun for the whole family planned.
Oh, yes. It's always fun for the families. We have four performances, two in the evening at 7:30, one on Friday evening, and one on Saturday. Saturday afternoon at 2, we have a matinee performance, and again on Sunday, we have a matinee performance at 2 o'clock.
Very good. And again, this all benefits the nonprofit El Capitan Stadium Association, benefiting the youth groups in Lakeside.
Yes, it does.
I want to thank you for joining us today on East County Magazine show on KNSJ.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Leon Thompson with our Green Scene Report. The county is taking steps to buy more land at Volcan Mountain near Julian for open space. The Board of Supervisors recently voted to hold a hearing on April 16th to consider buying 114 acres of land next to the Volcan Mountain Wilderness Preserve. The property is located north of Banner Road and east of Farmer Road in Julian. It is mostly forest land with some areas of chaparral and coastal sage scrub. So far, the county and other organizations have acquired more than 34,000 acres in this vicinity with the idea of preserving the beauty and wildlife of this land for future generations. Funding is expected from two sources: a $115,000 grant from the California Habitat Conservation Fund and $205,000 from the Multiple Species Conservation Acquisitions Fund. Supervisor Diane Jacobs said, "The Volcan Mountain Preserve is probably one of the best, most pristine areas in our whole region."
You're listening to the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, from the desert to the coast.
Many newer vehicles come with fancy GPS and onboard computers that collect data about where a person drives, how fast, and any accidents they may have had. Legislation introduced at the state capitol on Tuesday would give vehicle owners more access to that data, which is currently controlled mostly by automakers. Cynthia Harris, with the bill's sponsor, AAA, says the bill would protect consumers.
We believe that when you drive a vehicle, you should be the owner of that information, and you should be the one who decides who has access to that information.
State Senator Bill Monning says his bill would allow people to see what data their car generates and decide with whom they want to share that information. The Alliance for Automobile Manufacturers calls the bill a AAA data grab, saying it would allow the insurance companies to use the data to raise insurance rates. Harris says there are already laws in place that prohibit collecting data for rate-making purposes.
Whatever information you surrender to an insurance company or to any kind of company that you are dealing with, that is up to you. You have the ability to give the information that you want.
Opponents of the bill also say it would undermine privacy protections by giving third parties access to information generated from a vehicle's onboard computer. This is Lori Abbott, California News Service.
The world-famous Harlem Globetrotters have entertained millions of fans in 122 countries over the past 88 years. Now the team, famed for its comedy basketball routines, is bringing fun summer basketball clinics to kids in San Diego and East County. The Harlem Globetrotters are teaming up with 24-Hour Fitness in the Santee, College Grove, and Balboa areas for clinics coached by Globetrotter star players. The two-hour clinics will be offered mornings and afternoons during late June at each of these locations. Globetrotter star Dizzy Grant says, quote, "It doesn't matter what skill level you are, every kid will have a blast at our summer clinics." The clinics not only teach basketball skills, but also how to be a good teammate, both on and off the court. Plus, kids get photos and an autograph session with Globetrotters players. Clinics are open to boys and girls of all skill levels, ages 6 to 12. For more information and to find the clinic nearest you, visit www.harlemglobetrotters.com/clinics. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Ed Barena.
This is Miriam Raftery with an important safety notice for owners of General Motors vehicles. Recalls have been announced due to several potentially dangerous problems. GM has just announced a recall of over 1 million sports utility vehicles or SUVs due to wiring problems with the side airbags. These airbags may fail to inflate during a crash, though thus far no injuries have occurred, the company says. The models being recalled for airbag issues are GMC Acadias and Buick Enclaves made from 2008 to 2013. Also, Chevrolet Traverse models from 2009 to 2013 and Saturn Outlooks from 2008 to 2010. In addition, GM is recalling over 64,000 Cadillac XTS sedans made in 2013 and 14 due to brakes that have overheated and caused at least 2 fires. Now, these recalls are separate from an earlier announced recall of 1.6 million vehicles due to ignition switch problems, and those have been linked to a dozen deaths. The recalls there include all Chevy Cobalts and Pontiac G5s from 2005 through 2007. Also, all Saturn Ions 2003 to 2007, Chevrolet HHR models from 2006 and 2007, Pontiac Pursuits sold in Canada and made in 2005 or 2006, the Pontiac Solstice in 2006 and 2007, and the 2007 Saturn Sky. If you have one of these vehicles and have not yet received your recall notice, you should contact your vehicle dealer.
A new report finds that the risk of earthquakes in California is being sharply increased by oil companies that are injecting billions of gallons of wastewater from fracking or hydraulic fracturing into disposal wells near active faults near major cities. Millions of Californians live in areas at risk for induced earthquakes, the report concludes. The report, titled On Shaky Ground, was prepared by Earthworks, the Center for Biological Diversity, and Clean Water Action. It found that 54% of our state's more than 1,500 injection wells are within 10 miles of a recently active fault. 23% are within 5 miles, and 6% are within just 1 mile of a fault capable of producing a quake. Scientists have linked numerous earthquakes across the country to fracking, including quakes as high as 5.7 on the Richter scale. Despite these hazards, the state has not done any studies to evaluate the increased risk of induced earthquakes from fracking in California. Equally disturbing, regulations do not protect Californians from the risk of these induced quakes, the report found. The cost of cleaning up quake damage to infrastructure and aiding survivors could well be borne by taxpayers. Moreover, disposal of fracking wastewater by the oil industry also poses other risks, including contamination of water supplies, wildlife habitat, and agricultural areas. There is no fracking in San Diego County, and currently no injection of fracking wastewater here, though such disposal does occur in neighboring Orange County. The highest risk cities in the state for induced quakes includes Los Angeles, one of our state's most populous regions. The situation will get worse, the report warns, if fracking of the Monterey Shale offshore moves forward. Extracting oil from the Monterey Shale would produce almost 9 trillion gallons of wastewater. The study's authors conclude that the only way to protect Californians from potentially damaging quakes caused by fracking wastewater disposal is to ban fracking, since the state has failed to impose regulations to protect the health and safety of residents or the environment. Reporting for East County Magazine and KNSJ, this is Ed Berenna.
This is Miriam Raftery with a missing persons bulletin. The San Diego Sheriff's Department and the family of 20-year-old Joseph Sweat are asking public help to find him. Mr. Sweat has been missing since March 17th, and he's been diagnosed with autism. Sweat came to Santee with his mother and brother from Los Angeles to attend a Christian college for 2 weeks. But shortly after 3 o'clock in the afternoon on the 17th, his mother and brother left the family's motel room on Woodside Avenue in Santee to get lunch. Joseph Sweat remained in the motel room to take a nap, but when his mother and brother returned, he was gone. They have not heard from him or been able to contact him since then. His family is very concerned about his unexplained disappearance. He was last seen wearing a bright orange shirt with red shorts and black shoes. He is white, has short brown hair, brown eyes, and was unshaven at the time. He stands 5 feet 10 inches tall and weighs about 150 pounds. He did not have a vehicle. If you have information on Sweat's whereabouts, please contact the San Diego Sheriff's Department at 858-565-5200. You can remain anonymous by calling Crime Stoppers at 888-580-8477.
The county reports that rattlesnake calls have tripled during an unusually warm winter. Since January 1st, the County Department of Animal Services has received 78 calls reporting rattlesnakes. Last year, only 24 calls came in during that same time frame. Our very mild winter and several heat spells are drawing rattlesnakes out of their dens earlier than usual this year. If you see a rattlesnake on your property, keep an eye on it from a safe distance and call animal control. They will impound the snake and remove it to an area where it doesn't pose a risk to the public. If you live in the county's unincorporated areas or in the city of San Diego or Santee, call 619-236-2341 for help removing rattlesnakes from your residence. In other areas, call the Animal Control Agency for your city. Snake bites are rare but can be fatal. Here are tips to reduce your risk of being bitten. To discourage snakes from taking up residence in your yard, it's a good idea to get rid of wood piles as well as anything that attracts mice and rats, which snakes eat. Check your yard for snakes before letting small children out to play. When walking anywhere snakes might be, stay aware of your surroundings. Don't get distracted by your cell phone, and if you're walking your dog, keep it on a leash. When hiking, wear sturdy hiking boots and stay on trails. Avoid tall grass, and be sure you can see where you're reaching. Watch for snakes before picking up rocks or sticks. Carry a walking stick, since a snake may strike the stick instead of you or your pet. If you do see one of the 5 varieties of rattlesnakes found in our county, back away slowly and wait for the snake to move on. If you hear a rattling sound, freeze. Carry a cell phone when hiking in a remote area. If you are bitten, call 911 immediately and remove any constricting clothing or accessories such as rings or watch bands. It's important to get medical treatment, including anti-venom, administered promptly. Reporting for East County Magazine and KNSJ, this is Ed Berenna.
This is Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine on 100 places offering free tax help. Do you need help to file your state and federal income taxes? Over 100 places across our county are offering free help from now through April 15th. This year, about 400 volunteers are preparing and filing people's taxes electronically and helping them take advantage of the Earned Income Tax Credit Program, the federal government's largest assistance program to support low-income families. The program was launched in 2003 because too many local residents weren't taking advantage of this major tax credit. The annual tax preparation campaign is conducted by the County Health and Human Services Agency in partnership with United Way, the Internal Revenue Service, AARP, local colleges, and other organizations. To use this free service, just call 211 to make an appointment at a site near you. In addition, college student interns and volunteers are screening families at some tax preparation location to determine if they qualify for CalFresh benefits, formerly known as food stamps. This tax filing season, there are three options to get your taxes done. You can go to a site and have a volunteer prepare your tax return, or go to a site with a computer and prepare the taxes yourself with the help from volunteers. You can also go to myfreetaxes.com to complete taxes on your own at home. The Earned Income Tax Credit, established in 1975, is a federal program designed to help low-income families and individuals out of poverty by allowing them to keep more of their income. The IRS estimates that between 20 and 25% of eligible individuals do not claim their credit each year. If you or your family worked last year and earned less than $51,000, you could qualify for as much as $6,044 from this tax credit, but you must file a tax return to be eligible. Last year, over 43,500 federal and state returns were filed by volunteers in the San Diego region, bringing almost $54 million in state and federal tax dollars to working families and the local economy. About $10 million came from the Earned Income Tax Credit.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, your network for social justice.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with the Green Scene Report. Could big energy projects proposed in East County lead to the loss of endangered bighorn sheep? According to the Bighorn Institute, peninsular bighorn sheep found only in our region are on the brink of extinction. Here in East County, a band of bighorns in the Carrizo Gorge has dropped from 120 sheep in 1972 to less than 40 in the most recent count. Mark Jorgensen is the advisor to the Bighorn Institute and former superintendent of Anza Borrego Desert State Park. He says that off-road vehicles, trespassing cattle, poaching back in the 60s and 70s, drought, disease, and mountain lion predation have worked together to push this population to the edge. We hope we can save this group before it is too late, he says. Now, Jorgensen has submitted comments on four solar projects proposed by Soytech and Boulevard, projects that he warns will further impede the free movement of bighorn sheep, ruining wildlife corridors that connect bighorn habitat areas. Soitec wants to build industrial-scale solar facilities less than a mile from lands that were purchased and set aside specifically to protect endangered species, including bighorns. But sheep don't recognize boundaries, and they may travel across the region in search of water and grazing. Habitat for the sheep has already suffered major fragmentation by the Ocotillo Wind Energy Facility, which Jorgensen calls an atrocity that he says has had a profound negative impact on Anza-Borrego Desert State Park. That project also encroached on a documented bighorn sheep lambing area, he said. Another deeply troubling concern is that Soitec plans to use massive amounts of groundwater to build its projects. Multiple experts have voiced concern that this would have severe impacts far beyond the project's actual boundaries, drying up groundwater, watering holes, and seeps that feed grasses on which sheep graze, potentially even destroying the ecosystem for the region. Hakumba Planning Group Chair Howard Cook has called on officials to reject the Soitec projects and call a halt to any further project approvals until a 2-year study of local bighorn populations that's now underway is completed. That study is being conducted by a binational team of biologists and veterinarians who captured and radio-collared and then released over a dozen of the sheep last October in the Sierra Juarez Mountains, just south of the international border. Cook made these recommendations in his comments on the Soitec programmatic draft environmental impact report submitted to the county. In a press release issued by the San Diego Zoo, Bill Tippetts with the Nature Conservancy states that the peninsular bighorn sheep's 2 major populations could be permanently separated unless we protect its habitat and key bottleneck connections throughout the peninsular range. Smaller, isolated populations are more susceptible to diseases and predation and are less resilient to climate change, he warned. Populations of the sheep in Southern California and Northern Mexico were once thought to be isolated, but recent field surveys by the San Diego Zoo Global and California Department of Fish and Wildlife have proved that sheep do cross the border. But that crossing has been made increasingly difficult, first by a border fence that has only a small gap to allow wildlife theoretically to cross. And nowadays, the sheep also have to cross 2 four-lane highways, Interstate 8 in the U.S. and MX2 in Mexico, to move across the border from their habitat. The 2-year study now underway aims to provide critical data on bighorn sheep movement, as well as connectivity of the population, genetics, and disease. A recent outbreak of pneumonia among bighorn in the Mojave Desert has further concerned biologists and reveals the vulnerability of having populations that are just too small and isolated. The Nature Conservancy has also voiced serious concerns over the Soitec project's impact on wildlife, recommending that the county find the environmental impact report insufficient due to lack of adequate biological studies. Soitec's environmental impact report acknowledges that no specific movement studies were conducted. According to the EIR, Soitec concluded that there are no known or defined wildlife movement corridors on its project sites, and further that its proposed projects pose a cumulative impact that is less than significant to habitat linkages and wildlife corridors. But the Nature Conservancy says that conclusion is not supported by the information in the project documents. The environmental group called for wildlife studies to determine, for example, if wildlife is using undercrossings on or near the project sites that might be disrupted, forcing the animals to use less safe crossing areas. A photo taken on January 1st by a hiker, Lori Baker, and published in East County Magazine showed radio-collared bighorn sheep very close to McCain Valley and the Sacatone roads near the Soitec sites and even closer to the Tule Wind Project planned in McCain Valley. Yet, the draft EIR for Iberdrola Renewables' planned Tule Wind Project in McCain Valley concludes that wind turbines are located outside of critical habitat areas and will not have any detrimental impacts on sheep. Wind turbines, of course, can put out infrasound and noise, as well as flashing lights that can be disruptive to wildlife. Even finding proof of the endangered animals right on a project site, however, will not assure their protection. When Pattern Energy's Ocotillo Express wind facility was approved, the project's EIR similarly concluded that the site was not bighorn habitat. That site was mysteriously delisted by the federal government as critical bighorn habitat when the wind project was proposed, despite road signs warning motorists to beware of bighorn crossing and numerous statements by residents and biologists that the site was clearly bighorn habitat with very recent sightings. When photos of a herd of bighorn on the project site were sent to then-Secretary of the Interior Ken Salazar, he did not take steps to protect them. Instead, he actually issued take permits allowing up to 10 endangered bighorn ewes and lambs to be killed by the developer, allowing the project to proceed at the expense of this critically endangered species. as we reported in an article titled Silence of the Lambs. Soytech spokesperson Karen Hutchins, when asked about the bighorn sheep concerns raised in comments on the Environmental Impact Report, replied that a full and detailed response will be included in the final EIR, which will be released later this year and will be available to the public prior to the Planning Commission hearing. Soytech and Thule Wind, each thousands of acres, are far from the only big projects proposed in what remains of Peninsular Bighorn Sheep's shrinking range. Other projects include Manzanita Wind, Silverado Power, Rough Acres Foundation Campground, Rough Acres Rock Crushing and Cement Plant, Chapman Ranch McCain Valley Road Solar, and various power lines proposed to hook up to these projects, as well as an SDG&E proposal to upgrade and expand power lines within Cleveland National Forest. Peninsular bighorn sheep were listed as endangered by the federal government in 1998 due to populations that were declining for several reasons, including destruction of habitat, a problem that continues despite the supposed protections. In recognizing the imperiled status of the species, the listing was intended to encourage conservation actions by federal, state, and private agencies. But the Bighorn Institute concludes, the struggle is not yet over. Research, habitat acquisition, and public support are needed for the goals of the recovery plan to be met. And unless the federal, state, and local agencies cease the fast-tracking of massive energy projects through bighorn terrain, however, the future survival of the species will be at even greater risk.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Ariel Johansson, bringing you the most exciting festivals, events, and attractions each week. This week's Destination East County program begins with two theater productions and ends with the Bluegrass Festival in the San Diego foothills. The theater production You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, a play based on the classic Peanuts cartoon characters of Charles Schulz, will be performed for a final weekend at Grossmont College through Saturday, March 22nd. The award-winning musical is full of fun and laughter, with songs like The Kite, The Baseball Game, and Supper Time, and is meant for the whole family. Then Young Actors Theater is pleased to announce the opening of the stage version of the family classic Alice in Wonderland at the Encore Theater on Friday, March 21st at 7 p.m. The show continues throughout March 30th, and the cast includes residents of the East County areas of La Mesa, Spring Valley, Santee, Lakeside, and El Cajon. Then for the first time, Sophie's Kensington Gallery in Kensington will collaborate to display the work of a local artist, Joe Neary. His collection, Birds, Animals, and Humans I Admire, will be featured in this joint public display throughout the month of March at Sophie's Kensington Gallery from 5 to 8 p.m. A true artist by nature, he is comfortable in more than just sculpture. His skills extend to painting, airbrush, and printmaking. Guests can join the San Diego Astronomers Association and the park staff of Sycamore Canyon Gooden Ranch Preserve in Poway for a star party on Friday, March 22nd at sunset. Professional telescopes and astronomers will be on hand to help participants view our galaxy. Watch the weather as clouds or rain will cancel the event. Now for a preview of some major upcoming events that require reservations. The Antique Automobile Club of America will be presenting a show at Summers Past Farms on Saturday, March 29th, which starts at 10:30 a.m. At this free outdoor event, visitors can wander among old cars of yesteryear and reminisce, and also visit the farm, which has a small cafe area and a plant market. The Iron Horse was the term for the train in bygone days. Next month, out at the Campo Railroad Museum in Campo on April 5th, from 12 to 4 p.m., the Chef's Stick Cuisine and the folks at the museum are celebrating over 50 years of service to the San Diego community together with the Southern California Vintners Alliance. They are firing up the Iron Horse for a buffet dinner with wine tastings, drawing prizes, a silent auction, live music by Trails and Rails, and of course, vintage trains. The popular Golden State old-time passenger trains will also run at 11 a.m., 2:30 p.m., and 4 p.m. that day. So guests can plan to make a day of it and maybe check out the cab locomotive ride option for an added thrill. Tickets for those 21 and older for the event can be ordered through the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum website at www.psrm.org. Saturday, April 12th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. is the date for the Hamul Kiwanis Hot Rod Show and Chili Cook-Off, with an all-class car show and chili cook-off with prizes, food, live band and DJ, and children's play area at Pio Pico Thousand Trails on Otay Lakes Road in Hamul. Information on how and where to enter your chili, as well as antique vehicle registration, T-shirt orders, and more can be found on the HamulKiwanis.com website and our East County Magazine calendar. The Lemon Grove Historical Society presents a day at the historic 1892 Troxell Manor and Gardens, Lemon Grove's third oldest home, which was built by William and Mary Ann Troxell, on Saturday, April 26th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Visitors can tour the manor and its gardens with ancient trees and a working organic garden and orchard. Also available will be demonstrations and live music under the trees with guitarists. Visitors can tour the manor and its gardens with ancient trees and a working organic garden and orchard. Also available will be demonstrations and live music under the trees with guitarist John Garner. Guests can also observe artists at work and enjoy refreshments and tastings. Garden-related door prizes will be given out. And lastly, the Ramona Bluegrass and Old West Fest is coming up on Saturday, May 3rd and Sunday, May 4th. This two-day local East County festival has a lineup of musicians performing on the Old West stage, a Civil War era camp, a saloon, mountain men, a prairie schooner, and the cowboys. You'll be able to visit their camps, talk, and learn about how life was lived in the 1700s to 1800s. That's all for this week. All of these events and more can be found on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at www.eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is supported by our listeners and with a community enhancement grant from the Board of Supervisors of San Diego County.
See you around, East County!
This is Miriam Raftery with a Crime Beat report. Police didn't have to go far to respond to a burglary call that came in on March 14th, shortly after noon, from a resident who came home to find a burglar in his house on Kentucky Avenue in El Cajon. That's right across the street from the El Cajon Police Department. The homeowner was able to notify police without alerting the suspect, said Lieutenant Rob Ransweiler. The suspect exited the house carrying a bag of the victim's belongings. The victim told police which direction the thief was heading, and they captured the suspect after a short foot pursuit. They also recovered the bag, which the suspect had dropped during the chase, and later returned the stolen property inside to the victim. 19-year-old Martell West was booked into San Diego County Jail on felony charges of residential burglary, as well as possession of a narcotic-controlled substance.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment. Today I'm interviewing Ken Culkin. My guest is an award-winning author of 10 books and recipient of a National Endowment of the Arts Fellowship. Ken's writing has also appeared in dozens of magazines, including Esquire, Best American Short Stories, and the San Diego Reader. Welcome, Ken. It's a pleasure to see you.
Hello. It's nice to be here.
Ken, you have a long history of writing everything from columns to short stories to your own novels, as well as mysteries co-authored with local writer Alan Russell. Which projects would you say that you enjoy the most and why?
The biggest amount of time that I've spent, and so I just enjoy writing. So my primary project over the years, for about the last 20 years actually, has been a series that began with a book called The Loud Adios. That's A-D-I-O-S, like in Spanish, only usually the accent mark is left off by mistake. From there, it just sort of transformed itself into a series in which I am able to explore this character, this Tom Hickey fellow, all the way from his childhood all the way until he is a very old man. and also his family, his son and his adopted son and his two wives and other historical characters all factor into different novels. And so I get to explore these characters, and they grow in my mind, and my knowledge about the historical characters grow a lot. So I just get a kick out of learning about the history of California, which is where they're all set, over the 20th century. And I just love dealing with the characters and the history.
So you're learning more about the real world and the world you created.
Both, yeah. I'm not sure that they're different, but sometimes they run together.
They merge.
Yes.
Your book, In Writing and the Spirit, offers guidance and inspiration to other writers. What would you say is your main advice, and have you received any feedback from the San Diego writing community about it?
My main advice is to read the book, because there's a whole lot of stuff in there, and I can't say that any one piece of advice is right for everybody by any means, because the feedback that I've gotten, and I certainly have gotten quite a bit from San Diego and elsewhere, is that this part really spoke to me. It's a sort of a series of meditations, just a couple of pages long, that offer, you know, different insights into the subject of mostly about inspiration and how we can get inspired, and how we can open our minds and free our minds and be ready to listen to the muse or the spirit or whatever we want to call it.
What inspires you? How do you listen to the muse?
The example that comes most readily to mind this morning, I get a lot of ideas in the bathtub, actually.
Oh.
Yeah, which is why I generally take baths instead of showers, and also on walks. But this morning, I realized there's a character named Leslie White, who was an actual detective investigator for the Los Angeles District Attorney's Office, and he just plays a very bit part, because I wanted to get in some information, and he was a good guy to give this information. Then I have another character that I have been wondering what to do with. He's somebody that's following Tom Hickey throughout the novel, and sometimes following his sister, Florence. So I didn't know who he was following and why he was doing this, and so I hadn't dealt with that yet. But it occurred to me this morning that he's following him at the behest of this fellow, Leslie White. So although Tom... Well, I'm not going to go into what happens beyond that, because I would give some stuff away. I don't want to. But the one thing led to another. The character led me to Leslie White, which led me to the reason why this guy is following him. And it opened up some distinct possibilities that could answer some questions about some thorny problems that I still have to solve in the novel.
So it's like unraveling a ball of string.
Mm-hmm. It all fell together in about 10 different pieces from one particular idea.
What fun.
Mm-hmm.
Well, going back to the mysteries that you co-authored with Alan Russell, I know they have the intriguing titles of Roadkill and No Cats, No Chocolate, and that they're about the madness of book tours. Is there a story behind the story? I mean, are book tours really mad?
Well, book tours are mad when Alan and I are on them. I'm not sure that everybody else is quite as mad as we are, but we're both pretty ornery. And we like to argue, and if anything is tedious, then our imaginations spring to life, and no telling what could happen. So they're very mad. But a story that I like to tell is when the title, No Cats, No Chocolate, came from a book signing. We were doing it. It was in Boulder, Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
And the bookseller said, "Hey, would you guys like to make some money, big money?" And we said, "Well, you know, we're not. We know, yeah. And he said, "Write a book called The Cat Who Would Die for Chocolate," because cats and chocolate were big in the mystery genre at the time. Well, Alan and I thought of ourselves as a step above writers who would capitalize on such mundane stuff as chocolate and cats. And we didn't see ourselves as commercial as all that. So we decided to write this book and go the absolute opposite way and call it No Cats, No Chocolate. Now, recently, it was quite a bestseller on Amazon in the ebook. We were number one in the Oprah category.
Wow.
and in the Midwest travel and in the West Coast travel, because we're on our way to be on Oprah in one of the books and the No Cats, No Chocolate. So what we did when we were promoting the book is we asked a bunch of writer friends to write the nastiest comments they could possibly write about us. And so they did. So we have a lot of famous writers that are saying just awful things about how degraded and what reprobates we are. So when a lot of people started reading that book, I got notes from friends that were just lamenting the fact that these people would have such awful things to say about us. So I really got a kick out of that because I had not realized that anybody was quite capable of thinking that an author, if they got comments like that, would actually put it in their book. So I was baffled and a bit chagrined by the fact that I think I don't know as much about the human mind as I thought I did before that, if they're capable of making that mistake. So.
Well, it sounds like you have a great time overall with this.
I do. I love it.
So last question, what is your next writing project and when do you think we'll see it?
Well, I'm hoping it'll be out in spring with Poison Pen Press. It's called The Good Know Nothing, and it's the second chronologically and the seventh actual book of the Hickey family series that I mentioned. It involves the Sundance Kid and Tom Hickey, of course, and it's set in 1936, right during mm-hmm. the Nazi Olympics. It also features B. Traven, that wrote The Treasure of Sierra Madre, and William Randolph Hearst and Marion Davies. And there's some other celebrity. Amy mm-hmm. Semple McPherson factors into it, the old-time preacher. So I'm just having fun. And now that I've solved these things that I solved this morning because of that one idea leading to others, I should be done with it sometime in July, and it should come out next spring.
Okay, well, we look forward to seeing it. Our time is up, Ken, but thanks again for joining us. For more information on Ken Culkin, and that's K-U-H-L-K-E-N, please visit his website at www.kenculkin.net. Again, this is Raina Menashe, and you've been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
Thank you.
This is a public service announcement from the County of San Diego. California is in the midst of a drought emergency, and there's no relief in sight as unseasonably warm winter continues. Governor Jerry Brown is asking all residents to cut water use by 20%, and that may be easier than you think. Simple changes in the garden can make a big difference when it comes to saving water. The County News Center TV's Down to Earth program is now offering several episodes to help you dive into water conservation. Just Google County of San Diego News Center to find them. The programs include, What is an Irrigation Zone? Plants need water to survive, but with little rainfall, most of us rely on sprinklers to do the job. Because some plants need more water than others, learning how to zone your garden can help minimize wasteful water. Another show is Boost Moisture with Mulch. Learn why mulch is critical in saving water in your home garden. You'll also find out how mulch is produced and where San Diego County residents can pick up mulch free or at low cost. Mediterranean Makeover and Mediterranean Plant Palette are additional shows. Mediterranean plants can turn a thirsty lawn into a beautiful and drought-resistant garden. Check out dramatic makeovers at some local homes. You'll also find a program called Native Plants, or How to Plant a Native Garden. Non-native plants are thirsty. Create a beautiful garden instead that cuts down on water use and maintenance by planting native plants, which are inherently suited to our San Diego climate. Another show is called The Water Conservation Garden, The Water Saving Mecca. This episode takes you on a visit to Cuyamaca College's WaterWise Garden right here in East County. You'll see gardening techniques such as xeriscaping that can save a considerable amount of water. This is Miriam Raftery with a missing persons bulletin. The San Diego Sheriff's Department and the family of 20-year-old Joseph Sweat are asking public help to find him. Mr. Sweat has been missing since March 17th, and he's been diagnosed with autism. Sweat came to Santee with his mother and brother from Los Angeles to attend a Christian college for 2 weeks. But shortly after 3 o'clock in the afternoon on the 17th, his mother and brother left the family's motel room on Woodside Avenue in Santee to get lunch. Joseph Sweat remained in the motel room to take a nap, but when his mother and brother returned, he was gone. They have not heard from him or been able to contact him since then. His family is very concerned about his unexplained disappearance. He was last seen wearing a bright orange shirt with red shorts and black shoes. He is white, has short brown hair, brown eyes, and was unshaven at the time. He stands 5 feet 10 inches tall and weighs about 150 pounds. He did not have a vehicle. If you have information on Sweat's whereabouts, please contact the San Diego Sheriff's Department at 858-565-5200. You can remain anonymous by calling Crime Stoppers at 888-580-8477. This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information.
Viejas wildfire and emergency alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation.
Now is the time to prepare for what is shaping up as a tougher-than-usual fire season. The firestorms of 2003 and 2007 taught us that homes with defensible space are far more likely to survive than homes without it. Defensible space is an area around the home where plants and trees are maintained to prevent fire from spreading quickly. A buffer zone gives firefighters a better chance to make a stand and save your home during a wildfire. Fire officials recommend clearing away dry brush to form a 100-foot buffer zone around your home. The buffer could include hardscaping such as tile, stone, or concrete patios and walkways, or fire-resistant landscaping such as succulents. Trim tree branches 6 feet above the ground so that low-hanging branches won't become ladders to spread of wildfire. Be sure to have a family evacuation plan in place and assemble a 72-hour survival kit. You can download it at readysandiego.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts provides free alerts via email for major wildfires and other regional emergencies countywide. Sign up at www.eastcountymagazine.org, where you can find timely news stories posted live during emergencies. You can also follow Viejas Alerts on Twitter to receive alerts on your mobile phone. In addition, you can also register with Alert San Diego, the region's reverse 911 system, at readysandiego.org. During an emergency, you can also consult sdcountyemergency.com, the county's website with evacuation updates and maps.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.